Okay, good morning. It's just after 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 17th, 2026. We are at the Carnegie Free Library and Music Hall in Carnegie, Pennsylvania. The main purpose of this talk, which is being held in front of a live audience, is to learn more about Carnegie veteran Effie Mae Snyder. The secondary purpose of this talk is to permanently preserve it and make it available to the public for many generations to come. Special thanks to the library for that. So this is going to be part oral history and part interesting conversation with some fun thrown in also. Effie was kind enough to agree to be the first person we talked to in our new series called From the Foxhole, Talks with Carnegie's Veterans. We call it From the Foxhole because foxholes are used in war to hide from the enemy and or whatever the enemy is firing at you. Foxholes can therefore offer some comfort and protection. And in our context, similar to that, our foxhole is a safe place and safe space where two buddies can talk together openly. Yeah. This talk will be an open talk. We're all going to get to know Effie and the ins and outs of her military service. Some good, maybe some not so good, and the impact of her service on her and her loved ones. That impact, good or bad, usually lasts as long as the veteran lives. And as we're about to find out, a lot of what Effie does and believes in to this very day results from her time in the military service. We're going to talk for about 45 minutes. We'll take questions after that for the veterans here and those who love and care for them. If at any point during this conversation you need to take a break because of what we're talking about, please do. Sometimes when veterans tell their stories, other veterans hear triggers in these stories, and these triggers can cause unexpected emotions or thoughts. We get that, so please do whatever you have to do. On that note, please be reminded that the National Crisis Line phone number is 988. If you are a veteran or calling on behalf of one, press 1 when you reach the menu. Call is free, the help is free, and the reason for the call does not have to be a life or death emergency. The Department of Veterans Affairs has two representatives here today. We'll be happy to provide more information about that. And thank you to the VA for that, now and always. Okay, now that we're done with the formalities, let's get started.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. First, the basic details about why we're here today. What branch of service, what job, how long, what locations, and what ranks, the high-level stuff.
Well, I was in the Army, 1964-1966, during the Vietnam Wars, or as they call it, era. My name is Effie Mae Snyder. I'm Southeast Missouri. I am not a native Carnegie person, as you can tell from my speech. I was a clerk typist. I served at Fort McClellan, Alabama for basic training. I went up the hill for clerk typist school. I was then transferred to Oakland, California at the Oakland Army Terminal, where I worked for in the passport section. Then I was transferred to Fort Huachuca, Arizona to a experimental, They were in, it's starting to move women into men's units. So I worked at a combat surveillance school, which involved radio-controlled airplane targets, which were actually drones. They were attached to an airplane by cable, towed into the air, released. Then they were taken over by radio, and they used these for targets for the airplanes. I never actually saw one in flight. And I don't know what else to say about it because I was just a clerk typist. I didn't do a whole lot, but I enjoyed my time in the military.
So we'll get back to a lot of that in a few minutes, but you explained us drones in 1965 or 66?
64.
We were using drones as early as
64, 65, but they weren't these little things you see now. They were as large as these tables in length, and of course, a wingspan. So they were not tiny things. I don't know what else to tell you about them because, like I said, I didn't actually go to the school to learn about the drones. I worked at the school as a clerk typist to type up orders and filing and all that, what a clerk would do.
Nonetheless, the fact that we were using drones, because drones are usually associated with activities after September 11th, so the fact that we've been using drones in any capacity for that long, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah, they were. I guess they were the earliest drones available.
Wow.
And I think they did repairs on them when they would misfunction. They would repair them.
And use them again.
And use them again, yes. Huh. They were expensive.
Probably a couple hundred bucks.
a little more than 200, yeah, I would think so.
Okay. Before we revisit the Army, you said you were from Southeast Missouri. We want to know just a little bit about your upbringing and your childhood, maybe up to the point where you decided to join the Army and why, and include any fun experiences and anything memorable. And I will prompt you by reminding us, you tell us about the work you did in agriculture.
Work in agriculture, that's a good way to put it, almost slave labor. Well, since I was the age of five and could walk and understand, I worked in the fields with my grandmother and other people. We picked cotton, chopped cotton. We worked in soybeans. We worked in, it's been so long I forget. But I do know that we worked sometimes from dawn to dusk for $5 a day. Cotton, when we would pick cotton, we would get maybe $6 for 100 pounds of cotton that we picked. It was a tough life, but that's the way the God gave us. At least we did have food most of the time. There were times when we didn't have much to eat. And I remember one time our cat came up with a rabbit. And my grandmother and the two of us chased the cat down and took the rabbit away from it so we'd have it to eat. We had a very basic diet. We didn't have chickens or pigs or any of that. We lived on a farm. We didn't own the house. We paid rent on the farm, and we worked in the fields to make a living. I'm the first one in my family to graduate from high school. And I'm also the first one in my family to have 2 years of college. So, you know, that's one reason I joined the Army. I couldn't take it anymore. So right out of high school, I joined the Army. And what else do you want to know?
What did you all do for fun or recreation?
Recreation? Well, occasionally we would go fishing.
Oh.
Occasionally. We didn't have any bicycles. We didn't have TV. We did have a radio, which we would listen to the Lone Ranger and mostly cowboys, Amos and Andy. I'm telling my age. But recreation, well, we jumped rope. We played chase. We played hide and seek. And we had this toy that my grandmother helped us make. They were tin cans, empty tin cans, turn them upside down, and you poke holes in the sides, put string through, and you would stand on them and walk on them. I think we called them Tommy Walkers or something to that effect. But my biggest recreation was the local library. I bet I read every book they had twice. So that was my we did have a movie theater, but we were about 10 miles out of town, so to get to the movie theater was quite an attraction.
Well, I feel like a lot of kids these days might be better off playing some of the things that you played when you were younger.
Oh, yeah, we made mud pies, too, but we didn't eat them.
Okay, so you wanted to get out. You wanted to get away.
Yes.
You wanted some food.
Part of that's true, yes.
Okay, so you're in the Army now. You joined the Army.
Yeah.
The Women's Army Corps.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what was that? What was that like? After you've been sworn in and shipped out, this young lady from Southeast Missouri. Oh, wait a second. Wait a second. Tell us how and why the Army changed your name.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, when I went to fill out my paperwork before I went to St. Louis for entry, I signed my name Femay Smith. Got to St. Louis, and a sergeant came in and said to me, "You don't know how to spell your name." And I said, "I don't." He said, "Nope. You're going to have to re-sign all of these papers and use your proper name." My middle name is M-A-E. So all my life, I had used M-A-Y. So all those papers had to be redone. They were not very happy with me.
Well, I can't say I've ever heard a story from a soldier who the first thing that happened was the Army changed their name.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, that's my birth certificate said M-A-E.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you had to change everything.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you, U.S. Army, for changing your name. Okay. So you get to your first duty station for basic training.
That was a Fort McClellan.
Fort McClellan near mm-hmm. Anniston, Alabama. What was that initial experience like, considering where you were from, and then now all of a sudden you're at a major Army training base? Was it shocking? Was it surprising? Was it awesome? What do you remember about the first couple of days?
Well, the first couple of days are always kind of a shock, you know, till you get used to people sleeping in a bay with a lot of other girls. Wearing those terrible uniforms. Oh, they were awful. But I loved going to the chow hall. They had very good food.
That's decent.
But I think the biggest thing that, before I even got to the base, that really intrigued me, or I don't know, I'll explain it. When I was a kid, we didn't go very many places. We didn't have a car, and we didn't have the money for bus fare and that kind of stuff. So when I joined the military, the first thing I did, I had to go from my home in Southeast Missouri to St. Louis for indoctrination and that kind of stuff. And I went by bus. That was interesting. Then when I got assigned to Fort McClellan, I had to go to Fort McClellan by train, which was really interesting, and because I had never traveled that much. And then from Fort McClellan to Oakland, California, I was on an airplane, and that was really interesting. And then from Oakland to Huachuca, I went by car, and we went down the rest of California and over into Arizona by car. So I did a lot of traveling.
That's a fair amount of traveling for a young lady from Southeast Missouri. Were these the first times you've been on a bus and a
yes,
train?
Yes, first time I'd been and on a bus, train, or a plane.
Well,
so
the Army is an adventure.
Yeah, it was. And so I was quite content. I got to do some things that I'd never done before and never thought I'd ever get to do.
Okay. So you have Fort McClellan, and you're in the Women's Army Corps. The Women's Army Corps at the time was women only.
Yes.
It wasn't interspersed with the men, and the way Effie will describe it in a few minutes, it wasn't even close to the men. She rarely saw male soldiers while she was in training at Fort McClellan. which is, by the way, where I went to training also. So we kind of sort of...
Yeah, we sort of know each other.
A little bit about Fort McClellan. Tell us about, not clerk type of training, but tell us about basic training. What do you remember about it? And do you remember any specific people or any specific events, good or bad, or just irritating? There's irritating soldiers always.
Well, so. Our drill sergeant was a very nice black lady. She was, I think, of course, I was only like 18 years old at the time. To me, she looked like she was like 60 or so. You know, young people think old people are really old. And she was a very nice lady and very fair to all of us. We had a mixed race platoon. And at the time, I never went off post. For one thing, I was afraid I'd get lost. Never went off post. And at the time, we weren't really encouraged to go off post because of there was civil unrest at the time. This was in Anniston, Alabama, and this was during the civil rights going on. The black ladies were told not to go off post because of the unrest. We were also told not to go off post in uniform because there was prejudice there. But I found that the girls, all of us, were companions. We all were going through the same thing. And if you needed help, we helped one another. I wouldn't care if you were black, white, yellow, green, or purple. We were all in the same boat. And as a young person in home, there was quite a bit of prejudice. I didn't really know any black people until I joined the military. The black folks had their own school. Most of them spent their money at their own groceries. And there just wasn't a lot of interaction amongst the whites and the blacks. But there wasn't any confrontations. We all lived our lives the way that we were, I don't know how to say it. It was as though there were two separate towns in the same little village. This part was black, this part was white. You didn't intermingle. They were not in our school either. They had their own school. I didn't even think about it. It never occurred to me. You know, they were just people, black people, and it didn't occur to me that they were different people.
Good, good. And the Army green is a bit of a neutralizing thing.
Well,
especially in training, as you mentioned.
I learned that blacks and Orientals, Indians, we were all people.
Right. And in the same boat,
trials, yes,
and tribulations and difficulties,
yes.
And you either work together and learn to rely and trust these people, or...
Well, when you're together like that, is as you say, we learn to rely on one another. Now, I know my dad was in combat. He was in the Second War, and he would tell us, when you're being shot at, you don't care who's in the foxhole with you.
Right.
Or if you're wounded, you don't care who's carrying you out.
Right.
Or if you're helping someone, you don't care what they are. You just know you need to help, or you need to help them.
And you use the word companions, and I think that's spot on, because they all become your companions, even if it's only just in the training environment. They all become your companions. And a couple of these companions helped you with a haircut.
Oh, yes. When I joined, I had hair like down to my waist. And one of the strictest rules was women kept their hair off of their collar. That means when you get up in the morning, you take all of that hair and you get it up on top of your head, off of your collar. But sometimes your hats don't fit. So then you've got hairpins sticking all over the place. And after about a week of that, I had enough. And a couple of the black ladies said to me, "You need to get rid of that hair, because if you got in trouble, the rest of the people got in trouble too. So they paid for whatever you did wrong." So they said, "You sit down right here and we'll fix you." And they did. That's what happened. That's how much hair I had then. And that's after a haircut. So they worked on it for about maybe half an hour, 45 minutes before they got it to look like that. And they were nice kids. We were all kids, 18 years old, first time away from home. You know, it just, I don't know what you would describe it. We became friends. That's what matters. And when I was at Fort Huachuca, I had a black lady roommate. And we all had grand time together. Lots of time, lots of fun together. Just kids.
Yeah, kids. Yeah. Kids is right. So these kids, sometimes the basic training had to go on KP, which stands for what?
Kitchen Patrol.
Oh, sounds important.
KP, Kitchen Patrol. Kitchen Police, beg your pardon.
What does it mean? What do you do on KP?
Well, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to start with, and you go to the mess hall, and you were assigned duties. And I picked pots and pans, because all I had to do was wash pots and pans. And when you got those done, you could sit down and rest, because they considered that the hardest job. Meantime, the rest of them were peeling potatoes, mopping floors, washing down tables, doing dishes, washing trays, you name it, they did it. And oh, by the way, Army coffee's awful.
It's a good thing we have Dunkin' Donuts coffee today.
It looked like mud, and it tasted like mud. And that's where I learned to drink coffee, by the way, is in the military.
Most soldiers learn to drink coffee in the military, but you learn not to like coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Basic training was about 8 weeks long, you said?
8 weeks, yes. Okay.
And among other things you did in basic training, you had to go through the gas chamber?
Yes. At that time, the women did not do a lot of field training, like guns and that stuff. But we did have 1 week. We wore fatigues. We wore combat boots. And we wore, of course, our caps. And they said, "We're taking you to go through the gas chambers." Oh, I forgot to tell you. We had this cute little thing called Oscar. It was a gas mask. We learned how to take Oscar apart, clean it, put it back together, put it on, clear it, and it stank. It was bad enough. But anyway, we went to the gas chamber. It was out in the woods there in Fort McClellan. We get out of the buses, and they said to us, "Everybody get in formation." And we went through the gas chamber without our gas mask. We all came out gasping, coughing, sneezing. Boy, it was awful. Then they said, "You can go through the gas chamber now with Oscar on. But when you get inside, you are to take the mask off when you get to the captain. Take your mask off, state your name, rank, serial number. Put your mask back on, clear it, and leave the chamber." Well, it was my turn, and I coughed all over the captain. So, but Otherwise, that's all the field training we had. We were like, we used to say we were glorified Girl Scouts because we really didn't do any field training. And at my age, at our ages, most of us, we would have been glad to learn something in the field. Shh. I turned it off, believe me. George, will you take this silly thing?
No harm done, just a little bit, just a tiny break to put a phone to rest for a minute. Okay, so you would have gladly learned other stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Because I was always a tomboy.
Okay.
So I would have loved to learn how to do all that stuff. It probably would have been scary and hard to do, but I would love to have learned to do it. I would have had a good time, I think.
No doubt, and you would have been a hell of a soldier.
Yep.
Okay. You finished basic training. You stayed at Fort McClellan.
Yes.
And you went up the hill to the school, what, the clerk typist school.
Right.
Where you learned how to clerk and type, I trust?
Well, I already knew how to type. We learned military forms, how to type military letters, and they didn't want any mistakes, I'll tell you that. And how to relay orders. Oh, I don't know what all. It was almost the same as basic training, except we learned more about Army correspondence work.
Okay. Was that kind of like just going to class, basically?
Yes.
Okay.
It was like going to maybe a college class.
Okay. So not too bad. Not too bad.
No, not too bad.
But with the same group of women that you went through basic with?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Because the women were assigned to different schools.
Okay.
We didn't all go to the same school.
Okay.
Some went to clerk type of school. Some went to language schools. Some went to mechanical schools.
Okay.
In fact, one of my roommates in Fort Huachuca worked on deuce and a halfs in the motor pool.
Nice. I've done that too. It's good work. Okay. So you finished Fort McClellan.
Right.
And your job certified and everything's fine. And they sent you to Oakland
Army Terminal.
In Oakland, California.
Oakland, California, underneath the bridge. It was, I was there in the winter. It was cold and damp and foggy most of the time. I worked in the passport section. What I did was handle paperwork and issue passports for Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia. They would get their paperwork done at their former post, and when they would get to Oakland, they would come to us to get their passports themselves. I was only there like 5 weeks. I'm trying to think of.
What was it like when you were handing out the passports to the GIs going to Vietnam? Was
you know what? It really didn't register.
Okay.
That these boys were going
and potentially not coming back.
And okay. Also, we had on the post men that had been there and come back.
Did you happen to interact or know about them at all?
Well, some of them were. They were in a bad way.
And that was probably pretty tough not to know about and pretty tough to avoid. And obviously
there were only maybe maybe 200 whacks and several thousand men. And I was told, I never saw it, but I was told that we had guards on our barracks because of the problems that these boys came back with, and they didn't want to, it was for our protection.
And I'm not a bit surprised, and for various reasons, and if that was a gate that they were going to open, then where would they have drawn any lines that needed to be drawn? And yeah, it was probably mostly for y'all's potential safety.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I never saw San Francisco.
Well, you're not worse off because of that.
As a matter of fact, I didn't. Only one time I was off the post, and I can't even remember where we went because I wasn't off post very long. I never seemed to want to get off post.
Well, coming from Southeast Missouri, the Army Fort has everything you'll ever need.
Yeah, everything we wanted or needed was on post.
Right.
Most of the time, if you went off post, it was to go to a local bar or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't drink.
Oh.
And I didn't smoke.
Oh.
So,
well, why not?
Well, when I was a kid, we couldn't afford it, for one thing. And I don't know, I just didn't like the smell of cigarettes. And I, as a whack, I didn't dare get drunk.
Okay.
Because there was too many things going on that it wasn't really a good idea to go and get drunk.
Okay. 5 weeks, five short weeks at Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And then you got orders to go to Fort Huachuca, which is where?
South. It's down near the Mexican border.
In Arizona.
In Arizona.
Okay.
Yes.
And why did you, what did you, what were the orders for? What was your job at Fort Huachuca?
Well, I went to work one morning at Oakland, and the sergeant told me to go back to the barracks, pack your duffel bag, you're going to Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And I thought, okay. Well, I joined the military too to travel, so.
Indeed.
I certainly did a lot of that. And at Fort Huachuca, I found out that I was assigned to the men's unit, but attached to the WACS, which meant I got my quarters and such from the WACS, but I got my job and my promotion through the men's units because I was part of the men's unit. I was not part of the WACS. I made E4 before I got out.
Good.
Almost E5, and they wanted me to stay and re-up, and I didn't want to stay because my husband had put in for overseas, and he had been assigned to Berlin, Germany, and I didn't want to be separated from him, but I took a civil service test and went back to the same desk and the same job.
Okay.
As a civil servant.
Okay, so let me help the audience understand. You weren't married before you got to Fort Huachuca.
No.
And then, thank you, United States Army, again, you met.
He's Army issue.
You The Army will issue you a husband. So you met George, your current husband, who is also in the Army of Fort Huachuca at the time.
Yeah, he's my only husband.
Oh, well, we all like that about you.
Yeah.
So in the Army at the time, when a woman got married, correct me if I'm wrong, you were allowed to be honorably discharged.
Yeah, you could stay in as long as you didn't get pregnant, or you could get honorable discharge.
Okay.
Which is what I did.
Okay. And so orders came for George to go to Berlin.
Right.
And you were like, that's it, I'm out.
I got out of the military.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Actually, I got out of the military before his orders came.
Okay.
Because I went back to the same job as a civilian.
How did somebody was watching out for you? If you were in the WAC and working in the Army as a clerk typist, and then you got out and then you went right back to that job with pay, somebody made that happen.
Well, I really don't know who made it happen, but it did happen. Same job, same desk. And as I said, they were just starting to mix women in with the men's units. Mm-hmm. They treated me really nice.
Well, and what that tells me is that you were really, really, really good at your job. And really,
yes, that it was.
Good yeah. girl. And really, really well liked also.
Well.
Because they don't. They could have just filled it with another whack, but they
yeah,
wanted to keep.
Yeah, they don't hand out. Well, in those days, they didn't hand out rank easily.
Right.
So to be promoted to Spec 4 in 2 years, in for Spec 5, that means you were doing a really good job, yeah. or somebody liked you a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. That's that's great. So that was it. You were married. You were out of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And you worked your civilian job there for a while. Orders came for Berlin, right. And then you followed your husband to Berlin.
Yes, he went. He went to Berlin. I think it was a month or two before I got to go there,
okay.
because he had to find a quarters.
Right. Okay. Okay. So that's a whole nother thing about you is. It's becoming a bigger and bigger deal in the last decade or so. What the military spouses have
yeah.
done for their what they used to call them sponsors.
Yeah.
But I think that word is going away. But that's nothing to sneeze at. Also, and perhaps we'll.
I think it's a good thing because when women would get married and get out, they lost that all that time and money that they spent training these women. They lost all that work.
It's an investment too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, investment. Yeah, mm-hmm. taxes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. How did so we've covered all that? I think we're at a good place to move on to looking back. How did all this impact you, good or bad? Did it change you? What's the result on Effie of being in the military?
Well, I got some college education. I got to travel. I ate well. I slept pretty well. And I had doctors it was just an entirely different life. I learned to be more independent. You know, because before it depended so much on somebody else's ownership, because we didn't own land that we worked on. We didn't own the houses that we lived in. We didn't own much of anything. So it gave me an opportunity too to send money home.
Oh, good, good.
To send it a lot but home to my grandmother and my mother.
Wonderful.
People who needed the money.
Right.
So, and I got to see a lot of the world that ordinarily I wouldn't have seen.
Right.
You know, I could have gotten married and stayed home and lived on a farm and be barefoot and pregnant, but that didn't occur.
So everybody who knows you knows that you are very involved in the veterans community here in Carnegie and close by. You're wearing some of your Army gear as we speak, and we think that's great, and we all love you for that. Did the Army help instill this compassion you have for veterans? I know some of it is just you, but why do you do so much for us?
I don't do as much as I would like to do. I think it comes from down home. Our people down there, there's quite a few people down there who are in the military, And my father was in the service. Second World War. He hit the beach at Normandy 8 days after the initial push.
Wow.
He worked across France, and he was a radio man. He was shot by a sniper.
Wow.
In the middle of a river. But he always said to me, if you can't do anything else, that's something you can do. Join the military. And people where I come from, we have more of a pride in our country, it seems. The flags are always up at the schools. We said the Pledge of Allegiance every day. I don't know. I love my country.
That's about as good as answers as I'll ever hear. And we appreciate all the stuff that you do. What do you want our good citizens in Carnegie and what do you want the community to know about the high costs? There's pressures of being in the military. About veterans yourself and maybe what you know of veterans in general.
Well, I know veterans in general support each other. I mean, maybe it's not monetary or what, you know, physical. But we go to a store, and if you see a vet in the aisle over, you go over and you say, "Welcome home." Anywhere we run into each other, we usually stop and talk, you know, and we compare our services. We say, "Well, where were you? How long were you in?" And when we part, we say, "God bless you." I do wish, though, that there were more support for our homeless vets. These men and women gave their lives, put their lives on the line for this country. And they sleep in the streets. They go hungry.
I think a lot of us agree that more can be done for veterans in those situations and situations similar to them. Unfortunate that it is.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of that, not just amongst the vets, but the whole nation. You know, we have a lot of people that live on the streets that are hungry and cold. I wish I could do more.
A lot of us do, and thank you for feeling that way. Anything that we missed? Anything fun or funny or just downright interesting?
Well, I don't know. It's partly funny, and when I was in basic training, we have what they call PT, physical training.
Yeah, we know it.
when I was, the instructor would run you around in a circle, blow the whistle, and you'd turn around and go the other way. Well, I didn't turn around fast enough. And a girl ran right into me. Hit me right under the eye with her forehead. I had the most beautiful black eye you ever saw. I'd like to describe the uniforms we wore in basic training. They were a blue cotton shirt with big white buttons, denim skirts, down below your knees, and they had to be below your knees. with big white buttons. So from here to below your knees, you had this line of big white buttons. And if those buttons weren't in a line, you were in trouble. And we had to spit shine our shoes, and I mean spit shine. And we had these adorable stockings. Oh, gorgeous. They had seams up the back. And if your seams weren't straight, you were in trouble.
Oh, my.
And our, and we had these PT shorts. They were denim, too.
Of course they were.
And we wore what they call granny slippers. You ladies know what grandma's shoes looked like? They looked like you had arthritis already. We had dress uniforms, the dark green and the light blue, and you hung them in a locker. But they had to be so far apart so they don't wrinkle, right? We had civilian clothes, and they had to be over on the side. Couldn't mingle. We had bunk beds, but they weren't stacked. They were just regular bunk beds. And you had to make granny corners, and they had what they called a hood. Where the pillow was, you would cover it with another blanket. Then the sergeant would come along and bounce a coin off of the off of the blanket, and it better bounce.
Mm-hmm.
We had, and I forgot to tell you the best thing. They issued us girdles. The women had to wear these girdles. 18 years old, and I'm wearing a girdle. And it was just, we had high heels, though, for the dress uniform.
Oh.
Yeah. But we didn't get to wear those very much. Not very much at all. But it was still a better life than I'd had before. So, but we had a pretty good time, you know, in the barracks. We didn't have time to play a lot of games, and we didn't have television or radio. And our foot locker, that was fun too. That was wood. Every item in that foot locker had to be folded just so. So that it went in the foot locker the way they wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And those stockings, you had to roll them up and tuck them in. And if the sergeant picked them up and dropped it on the floor and it came apart, you were in trouble. So they had all kinds of rules and regulations, but they weren't too strict. I mean, they had their rules, and if you were smart, you followed them. If you wanted to get in trouble, if you didn't want to follow them, that's when you got in trouble. So I enjoyed my time in the military. I really did. And I'm very grateful to the government for letting me be in there. Because, quite frankly, my school grades were awful. Just awful. And it was better than chopping cotton and picking cotton. And I had access to everything I needed. And I was content. That's all that mattered.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. You ready for some questions?
Yeah.
Questions. Okay.
Speak up. Translation.
Yeah. So after training, when you were at Oakland and when you're at Fort Huachuca in your quarters, did you still have to maintain those basic training standards for your beds and tucking it in?
No.
And the hood and
no. In fact, we could have coverlets, you know, like bedspreads. We can have our own pillows. We can have our makeup, which I never wore. We can have our makeup out. We can have our perfume. We could wear perfume.
Oh, boy.
But you were only allowed to wear red lipstick. You couldn't have pink or chartreuse or any other. It had to be red. Red lipstick. That's what we got to wear. And you had to wear it. You weren't allowed to go without it. You had to wear it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So not a, and it wasn't a situation where when you wore red lipstick, it had to be red. You had to wear red lipstick.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was part of the uniform.
Of course it was.
Yeah. And it was really frustrating because lipstick, in those days, the lipstick was not smear proof or it wouldn't stay on. When you eat a sandwich, your lips get on the bread and the lipstick would come off on the pieces of bread. So you had to renew your lipstick all the time. But even that wasn't frustrating. You know, it's something you had to do. Don't talk to him. I'm married to him. Oh, well, out Fort Huachuca, my roommate said to me, I got a date with this man from Hawaii, and he has a friend who needs a date. Would you go? And I said, I really don't want to. I'm tired. I want to go to bed. She said, oh, come on. You know, one of those things. So I said, okay. So came date night. We go downstairs from the barracks. And she and her boyfriend get in one car, and he and I got in the other car. I never saw him again that night. So this is out in Arizona. We're out what they call boondocking. We're driving our cars out across the desert, right? And the next thing you know, I'm asleep. And he says to me, should I take you back to the barracks? I said, yeah. So he took me back to the barracks. And that was just before Christmas. So apparently he went home on Christmas leave. I went home on Christmas leave. We came back. And the next, I think it was in January. Excuse me. I was standing out on the porch in front of the building that I worked in, waiting for the bus to come to take us back to the whack shack, we call that, to the barracks. And this little Volkswagen goes, it turns around, comes back, and it pulls up. And this fella, the Hawaiian fella, leaned out. And he said, would you women like a ride back to the whack shack? And we said, oh, sure. Six of us in this little Volkswagen. So I remembered his friend's name and introduced him to the girls I was with. I didn't remember his name. That was in January, and we got married in the end of March. We've been married now, it'll be 60 years this coming March.
60, 6-0.
60 years, yeah. And by the way, he's a minister. Been a minister for 40 years. So it worked out okay.
I would say the Army did both of you pretty good in that department.
I think so, yeah. I didn't get in the military to get a man. In fact, I didn't want one. I was hoping to make the military a career, but the Lord had other things in mind.
Indeed he did.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And we've been to England, we've been to Germany, we've been all the way to the north of the United States, all the way to the south, east and west. We've been all over the country. So he's a good egg.
You'll keep him?
I'll keep him for a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other questions?
About 2 years. I worked as a civil servant there. I worked for a undercover unit. The men in my unit, well, the unit I worked for, beg your pardon, all spoke 3 to 4 different languages. And we worked in a secure building. If I didn't know you, you didn't get in. So, and my husband also worked for a secure unit in Berlin. It was a beautiful city, just gorgeous. Of course, we used to go down and down to the wall and stand and look over. And one time we were up, they built platforms up so you could stand up and look over into East Germany, into Berlin. One time we were there, and an older lady came and climbed up on the wall. And over on the other side, these two little kids came out of the house, and they had little red flags. They were walking around singing and waving these little flags, having a good old time. They were her grandchildren. She wasn't allowed to see them. That's the only way she got to see them, is by climbing up and looking over the wall. But it was a beautiful city. Oh, their parks are like, their cemeteries are like parks.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful place. Of course, there are a lot of beautiful places in this country, too. A lot.
Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
This has been phenomenal. It's been an honor to talk with you today. And I think the audience and the people that will listen to this, we're all a little bit better off because of the things you've shared and the time you spent with us. So,
well, sometimes I wish I'd have stayed in. You know, I could have retired at 40.
Right, right.
You know, or stayed in and retired at 50 with 30 or 40 years in, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it wasn't to be.
And I'm kind of glad it worked out for you all the way it did.
So I'm not retired, I'm just tired.
The Army will do that to you.
But, and I very much like the American Legion and the VFW and something called the 40 and 8. Anybody know what the 40 and 8 is? Not you, George. You know. The 40 and 8, that's an organization that is an offshoot of the American Legion. It's from the First World War. For the First World War, it's a veterans organization. And it's based on the First War, when they would load boxcars, they could put 40 mules in or 80, no, 40 men or 8 mules to ship them. So there is an organization down in Washington called 40 and 8, and it they're a nice bunch of people. Unfortunately, it's fallen by the way because people don't. Oh, and they sponsor nurses. They help pay for young women to go to nursing school. So they do have a very good organization, but it's dying off. But there was. And we belong to the Vietnam Veterans of America. And any other group that we can get into. We have sat on several committees at the American Legion. What do you call it? Youth Achievement Awards. They give awards to seniors in high school for their there's a whole list of awards they give out. And trying to think.
So you and George are still serving.
We're still serving, yes.
That's great.
Yes.
That's great. We need more people like that.
We do, yeah. And I think if these veterans, a lot more veterans had more to do, then there would be less suicides.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Suicides among veterans is extremely high. So if you know a veteran, give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
Say, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Mm-hmm.
You see a veteran walking on the street, say, welcome home.
Agreed. And those are called buddy checks, by the way.
Well, yeah, the Legion has a buddy check system.
Yeah, good.
I forgot. Yeah, she's got her hand up back there. She's our local service officer. She makes those kind of calls to people who, veterans, to see if they're okay. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, I'm the bugler for Post 86.
He is indeed.
82.
Mm-hmm.
82. I'm the bugler for Post 82, which means we go to, they have a ceremony at the viewing where we go and we have a veteran ceremony. The president of the commander of the post has a service that he does. The chaplain has a service. We have taps. We also go to the cemetery if they want, and we have play taps. We put flags in about 5 or different cemeteries every year. I mean, we do a lot of stuff. We have veterans, disabled veterans over to the post, and we feed them and play games. I mean, we have a children's Christmas party. We participate in the Memorial Day parade. I mean, we just do a lot of stuff. It's hard to remember all this stuff. Especially when you get my age, I'm lucky to remember what happened yesterday. But if, like I said, if you see a vet sometime somewhere, just say, hello, how are you doing? They might not reply, but at least they've had a greeting from someone during the day.
You've touched so many lives and continue to do so, and that's beautiful. Thank you for that. Any other questions?
Have you had any contact or still contact or know what happened to the women you were in the basic training with?
Unfortunately, no. No.
The question was there any contact after basic training between Effie and some of her basic training mates? And the answer is no, and that's oftentimes the case. That doesn't mean those relationships and friendships are weak or gone, because they're always permanent among soldiers, especially when they go through that environment. There was no contact after basic training.
And you're so widely scattered.
That too. Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of times, in my case, I had, within the 2 years, I had three or four transfers. So it's hard to keep track of people sometimes. I remember them. They're in my mind. But unless you have contact with their families, you have an avenue to contact them, because their families know where they're at. But if you don't know their families, you lose contact rapidly, especially. Yeah, no, we didn't have cell phones in those days. Okay, that gentleman had a question.
I just wanted to say that my father was a Navy veteran. He passed away just a month ago. He was in around the same time, 1963 to 74. He got out because I was born. He got out maybe because of your husband. You can blame this man for you guys getting out. This brings me closer. I wish he could be up there. I wish he could be here today. I wish he could be there speaking. But thank you for telling your story. This,
That's pretty hard to be.
Yeah.
You got all that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, most of it.
Okay. So, yeah, his father, who recently passed, was a sailor. Same time period that you served, and his gratitude, he's being kind of humble about it. He's very grateful that you shared these things today.
He was in the Navy?
Yes. And
I had a half-brother that was in the Navy. He retired from the Navy. And my sister's fellow was in the, he retired from the Navy. He was a, he worked in the bottom of the ship. The engine room. He retired from there. Yeah. So we've had a lot to do with the Navy.
But it just goes to show you that even though your service was your service, it's similar in a lot of ways to a lot of people that served during that time, regardless of the branch they were in.
Yeah. I think the Vietnam vets in particular seem to be closer to one another. Mm-hmm. And the World War II vets are dying away fast. Mm-hmm. Korea also the same. They're dying away fast. But I think there seems to be more of a camaraderie between the Vietnam vets than other wars or clashes or whatever you want to call
sure,
them.
Sure.
When
sure.
I was in, we didn't call it the Vietnam War. We called it the Vietnam conflict. A conflict. Mm-hmm. It was never actually declared a war, was it?
That's part of my military history. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure some.
I think
some
it was never called
do.
A war.
I don't think it was ever officially
called.
War,
yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Effie? Oh. Somebody's phoning in a question. Pizza's ready. This has been great. Well, thank you.
Thank you
so very, very much.
Thanks for putting up with me.